This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hurts in the gun. He backpedals. He's looking, still looking. He fires it out in the flat to Barkley, who beats one man, spins past another, leaps over a third, and jumps down at the 30.
What was that? I've never seen that move, and I've been watching football all my life.
That was that audio courtesy of the Eagles Radio Network. I thought the same thing. I'm like, man, I've watched decades and decades. I've been watching football for well over 40 years now. And I figured I've seen everything when it comes to a move a guy can make or something that can happen on a play. I've never seen that before. If you saw it yesterday, you know exactly what it is we're talking about. That was, by the way, that was Saquon Barkley jumping, leaping, leapfrogging backwards over a Jaguar defender. That's your 5-hour energy play of the game. 5-hour energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610. And football super fans. There was no Texans game on Sunday. That play deserved its own spotlight right there.
That was incredible. I had tweeted out that it wasn't, you know, the NFL isn't rigged, but we are definitely living in a simulation.
Yeah.
This is, we are in the Matrix, which is cool because now I got some traction amongst various simulation truthers. I've got a few flat earthers that think I'm on their side now. So I might lean hard into that niche. I think I'm gonna go into that world. Put out some glitzy YouTube videos.
There are clicks available in that world, I'm told. People do click on those things.
That's how I want to live my life,
yeah,
John.
For sure.
No way to prove that we're not in this simulation, but it was pretty damn impressive.
It was impressive.
It was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Barkley's had a great year, man. He's had a great year for Philadelphia. They beat Jacksonville yesterday. Hey, shout out to the Vikings. Did the Texans a solid last night against the Colts. Kept that gap at two games for the Texans. That was nice.
We still don't, and the Vikings are in that world where, hey, they lost two games in a row. And, all right, well, we just won a squeaker versus the Colts, I guess. Are we back?
Well,
are we back?
If Darnold could have just protected the football. Like, the Colts sucked last night. The only touchdown they scored was on a Darnold sack fumble return for a touchdown by Grover Stewart. Or by Kenny Moore. Grover Stewart had the sack. Yeah, the Colts. Yeah, Flacco. We'll get to that in headlines. Flacco might be a pumpkin. I'm just saying.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he is. No, which is great because that means that there's huge dissent probably within the Colts organization, but the fan base is melting down. Yeah, I can't believe you benched Anthony Richardson just because he's an awful quarterback.
So this was interesting. Did C.J. Stroud hint at dissent from within in his post-game press conference? Now, I did not. The dog whistle did not go off for me, but I'd seen you found this audio. I saw other people reacting to it similar to the way you did as well.
Yeah, Jason Bristol actually from KHOU was the first one where I'd like, oh yeah, I listened to all these clips real briefly on 3 hours of sleep Friday
Same.
Morning.
Yep.
And I didn't catch the significance of it. And yeah.
Okay.
CJ just kind of casually mentioned something that I don't want to read too much into, but I don't want to skate by it.
Okay.
Well, so listen to CJ at the beginning and about the first 10 seconds of this clip.
Okay.
Yeah, I always say that. You know, we've had a couple wake-up calls this year. I would say, you know, we just got to honestly just play football better, execute better, stop pointing the finger and realize, you know, at the end of the day, like, this is not winning football. And we can't keep squeezing our way by every game. You know, we are a really good football team. We have a lot of really good football players. Once we buy into the systems and what is being, you know, coached, and also we got to be able to have leadership to take over. So, you know, I believe, you know, this isn't the end, but this is definitely a great wake-up call for us to, you know, tighten up the ship. And, you know, this is now playoff football is November and December. So we got to be able to – this is going to be the chunk of our schedule. A lot of great teams we're playing on prime time, and, you know, we got to be able to find ways to win.
Okay, the one thing – and I know we're going to get to the pointing the finger thing. The one thing that I heard in addition to that in there too – is that CJ is just as sick of the winning on the last possession every week thing.
Right,
as everybody else is. As everybody else is, and that group, which I consider myself part of, gets criticized often for like, hey man, they're winning at least. And it's like, no, when you have the habits that allow Jacksonville and Chicago and these other teams to hang around in these games, it manifests itself in a loss to the Jets eventually on Thursday night football.
No, it's like you're in high school football and you're in a horrible, you know, you're playing out with in your crappy league, and then all of a sudden you go to the playoffs and it's just a whole different
deal. Get the doors
deal.
Blown off.
But
you.
The two quotes in there, we got to execute better. Stop pointing the finger.
Stop.
Okay. And then also, once we buy into the system. So I like, okay, so we got to stop pointing the finger. He didn't say we can't start pointing fingers.
No.
He said we got to stop pointing the finger, and once we buy into the system. So who's not buying into the system? Who's pointing fingers?
Well, I'll tell you one, Kenyon Green's dad. He's definitely pointing the fingers and not buying into the system.
The offensive line coach. I'll tell you, this is the thing, and this is where I'm torn. I'm the first to say, yeah, hell yeah, go ahead and get yourself an offensive guard somewhere in free agency.
Yeah.
But the problem is there are so many teams in the NFL that get by with journeyman guards, and they get the most out of those guys. And I think there's times where Kenyon Green or Kendrick Green or Shaq Mason or Juice Scruggs, there's times where some of the, like, I swear at times they'd be better off just standing in place because they're out of position. They're not getting to their blocks. They're doing all of these things, and it gets compounded when you have good defensive linemen like Quinnen Williams or to the Javon Kinlaw there from the other night. They wreck an entire play by getting penetration or beating their block. And that, at some point, as bad as this offensive line has been in pass protection and handling movement and any kind of chicanery from the defensive line, that comes back to coaching. And a combination of Chris Strausser and Bobby Slowick, they're just flat out not getting it done right now.
Yeah. But when you say buy into the system, like is CJ, does that mean CJ believes in the scheme and it's the offensive line's fault? Or does that mean, I mean,
I think
from what you're saying, it sounds like maybe the system needs to change a little.
Well, no, because he's saying we got to buy into this. This guy's got to buy into the system.
Right.
So I feel like he believes it. So it's a matter of who else on the offense isn't buying into the system or believing it.
Right.
Is it the tight ends? Is it the wide receivers?
Yeah.
Is it just the offensive line? I have no idea. But I wish they would. Whatever the system is, I wish they would buy into it. We're 1.5 years into this system.
Yeah. And 1.5 years into it, and it's working worse now than it was last season. You know what I mean? Like that's the frustrating part is that the only talent-wise, the only changes that have been made to this offense, personnel-wise versus last year, talent-wise, it have been improvements. Not that you haven't lost anything. Like this is a more talented offensive line than you trotted out there last year, and yet it's playing far worse than the offensive line. The other upgrade you made was Joe Mixon, who's been amazing. That upgrade has worked, but there's nowhere else out there. Everybody else is the same guys, but Dalton Schultz is playing worse this year. You know, you got Nico's hurt. You know, the Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson have not made a step up here when you've needed at least one of them to have made a step up when you lose guys here. The Stephon Diggs knee injury is unfortunate. That's football. That happens, but you didn't have Diggs last year. You know, so that's, you know, when we're comparing this year to last year's personnel, Diggs was gravy to begin with. So that's the frustrating thing for me. It's like, you're exactly right. You're a year and a half into this. This is not a new offensive coordinator. I was told, Seth, the continuity was a positive, with this team.
Right.
They're bringing everybody back. Bobby Slowick's back. Gerard Johnson's back. Everybody's back. We're getting healthy again on the offensive line. I was told these were all good things, and yet here we sit heading into Week 10 in a game against what I will say is the best team in football right now. The Detroit Lions, I don't care about records. They are the best team in football right now, and you are 7 days away from getting embarrassed again on national TV on primetime football if you don't get your bleep together on the interior of this offensive line and in other places on this.
Yeah, team. And I don't, you know, Nico Collins can only bail you out of so much of this. It can make life easier for CJ Stroud in a lot of ways, but it's not going to fix those issues that keep you from being a genuinely really good offense.
Nope.
And look, with the offensive line, we're at a point now where, like you said, most of the guys are the same guys. Everybody that's on the offensive line has been in those meeting rooms at least. You know, Kenyon Green had been for all of last season.
Yep.
That it's just impossible not to look at coaching. And you go back to the fact that last year we were 2/3 of the way through the season, and Bobby Slowick was talking about how, Chris Strausser, the O-line coach, had never been in a system like this, and there was a learning curve there. All right, well, I mean, I know from watching O-line coaches operate, as well, like Alex Gibbs Sr. in the Gary Kubiak system, that, man, there's a lot to coaching a system like this. There's a lot of technique. It's not just drawing it up on the whiteboard and showing you what zone blocking is. There's handwork, there's footwork, there's all those things. And right now, the offensive line looks like it's regressed in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So I don't know what's to be done about it in season or what the solution is, but it just, you know, going back to like teams that have had subpar guards over the years, like the Colts forever, they had journeyman offensive linemen who would end up making the Pro Bowl year after year because Howard Mudd, the offensive line coach, coached the system so well. The Tennessee Titans, when Munchak was their offensive line coach, same thing. Take journeyman linemen and turn them into something.
Your guy's
such a good coach.
Your guy Stoutland with the Eagles, man, is a staple. Really good coaches.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll talk more about the possible solutions for this top of the hour. We got a bunch of big questions coming out of the long weekend here that we should get answers on, I would imagine, in the next 24 hours between D'Amico Ryan speaking to the media later today and the trade deadline tomorrow. So we'll get to that at 7 o'clock. This is a kind of a key day for the Astros here. This is the day that they've got their exclusive window to negotiate with Alex Bregman expires at 4 o'clock today. Well, a lot of deadlines, man. We got a trade deadline tomorrow. We got the Breggy deadline at 4 o'clock today. But when the season ended last week on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever the Yankees spit the bit, Wednesday, that as soon as that was over, that triggered the 5-day window the Astros have to make an offer to Alex Bregman. I've not heard from any source yet what the offer is or if the offer's been made, but they've got till about dinner time today to get it done.
Were you hoping that he'd pull a Colby Rasmus and just sign the qualifying
offer? Have they even made the qualifying offer to him? I don't think so.
That's a formality that whenever they make the... He's not going to pull a Colby Rasmus.
No. I think it was Ari Alexander of Channel 2. Ari had a piece. Ari talked to some guys in personnel in baseball on the condition of anonymity. And the ballpark for everybody, there were 8 of them. 2 of them thought that Bregman would be coming back to the Astros. The other 6 all had deals that were anywhere from like 5 to 7 years for anywhere from like 130 to 180 million. You know what I mean? They were all like forecasting what Bregman was going to make on the open market. Do you have a confidence level here that Alex Bregman remains an Astro? Is it this? have you been holding steady, or where are you at? Like, where are you at right now with Bregman?
I think the only, I was going through, as Hunter Brown signed with Scott Boras this weekend, or at least it was reported that he signed with Scott Boras. You know, I always do that thing where, like, hey, everybody calm down. Like, not everybody goes to free agency with Scott Boras.
Yeah.
Because, like, Altuve has signed two extensions with Scott Boras. And yet, when I look at Scott Boras's notable exceptions that aren't Altuve, all of them are 6 years or more. And, you know, like, are the Astros going to break their longstanding rule against signing six-plus-year extensions? I just have to say probably not. Until they actually do it, I'm guessing probably not.
I wonder, that we always talk about the Astros side on this. I wonder what Bregman's side is just in terms of how he views the organization right now. You know, how he views the window. They are in a bad situation right now with their, I'll call it, you know, kind of salary cap, for lack of a better way to put, you know, competitive balance tax, the luxury tax. They're in bad shape. They are spending tens of millions of dollars this coming season on guys who will play no baseball for them this year. Jose Abreu's on the payroll for another year. Rafael Montero's on the payroll for another year. That's $30 million right there. Who knows what Lance McCullers is at this point? They're $17 million. Christian Javier's probably not going to pitch for this team this year. I'm going to assume he's not going to, because all these guys that get Tommy John seem to get pushed off. You know, they get, hey, they'll be back in July or August. Oh, wait, no, they won't. So that's $12 million for Javier. That's $60 million right there. That you're paying guys to do nothing for you this year, you know, and you're already up against it.
I guess the only counter to that is, all right, when it comes to handicapping which team you're going to go to, I mean, outside of the Dodgers and the Yankees, is there a franchise where you think, oh, yep, no matter what happens, they're going to be competitive over the next several years?
Probably not, but there's ones that are better set up to be competitive than the Astros and have a willingness to go beyond the luxury tax than the Astros do.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, like in handicapping it, the older you get, the more you realize it. Okay, I can't try to pick the spot that I think is going to win a championship, because that's why Vegas makes so much money, because it's really, really hard to do unless you're just flat out going to a team that is willing to spend oodles more than everybody. And even then, obviously, it doesn't always work out.
All right, let's get to headlines up next. We've got a couple.
I just used the word oodles. Ugh.
It's okay, man. It's a two-hour
show.
Hey,
Sean, how do we connect with Gen Z?
I don't know. They're a bunch of nincompoops, Seth.
I'm gonna have Brandy get a beehive hairdo, and I'm gonna use words like
yeah, that's
oodles.
True. Oodles.
Yeah.
Oodles, nincompoop. Yeah. All right, let's get to headlines. Big day in the NFL yesterday. We will thank the Vikings again for doing the Texans a solid. Some big news for a soon-to-be Texans opponent as well that we'll get to in headlines. And there was one accolade for the Astros yesterday that we'll get to in headlines as well. Stay there.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.